Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:43 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 3rd. Well, the Nasdaq is above 13,000, and I've been saying for a while now that if it did that, I'd take the profit on my short. So I did that today. So I think I was rather lucky in my entry point because I got in right before the big decline at the beginning of the second quarter, and the index pretty much went down for the entire quarter. So now we've seen a meaningful rebound. We're back above the 13,000 level, which is the lower side of the overhead trading range and in the region of the 200-day moving average. Well, I'm not quite convinced just yet that this is a rebound that has staying power. I'd much prefer to see it above the 200-day moving average, but at the same time, I wanted to take a profit, so I've done that. So in the last week, I've closed out my short, taken the profit on my copper short, and then closed out my full position in the Nasdaq as well. So that's taking me out of all of my short positions right now. And of course, that's representative of the significant rebound that we've had. Well, I sold the first half of the Nasdaq short about a month ago because I was anticipating that there would be a rebound. So we've had the rebound, and now it's time to take out the rest. When I think about why is the market rebounding? Well, we've had a lot of oversold conditions triggered. So we can think about the number of shares trading below the 200-day moving average. That's a good contrarian type of indicator. And it's back in the region of the lows from 2016, 18, 20, and now 22. It's when we look at the chart, it doesn't look like there's a congruency of 2-year intervals. It's just that it sounds like that. But what we can prepare for is that there are going to be times, at least every couple of years, when the market pulls back in a dynamic manner and it creates a buying opportunity. And well, that's what people are thinking right now. They're basically concluding that this is one of those occasions. But of course, in 2016, 18, and 20, we had a significant Fed pivot as well. So we're not quite there yet in terms of this market. So we could easily have a continued advance, and there's definitely risk appetite recovery. So let's just think about Apple. And Nancy Pelosi was in Taiwan yesterday, and the stock was down a bit, and then it rebounded really emphatically in here today. So this is clear confirmation of support in the region of the 200-day moving average. And one would have to think that one of the measures that China is going to take is to boycott some American goods and services. That's an easy, low-cost thing to do, and certainly cheaper than firing off tons of munition all of the way around the Taiwan island. But there is no evidence of investors taking that into account today. So Apple was up in a really dynamic manner. And Tesla also rebounded really quite emphatically, and also bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average over the course of the last week. So, I mean, this is not a consistent trend, and it could easily get all the way up to $1,100 and still be in a downtrend. But obviously, this is. I think one of the most important things right now is to think about short term, medium term, and long term opportunities. So, in the short term, there is the clear potential for these stocks to continue to rebound because we've had oversold conditions. Now, some of those oversold conditions are rapidly being replaced by overbought conditions. And then I saw this rather interesting chart today, and it shows the breadth. So breadth deteriorated really sharply on most indices, whether it's the NYSE, the S&P 500, the Nasdaq, or the TSX in Canada, and came back into the region of lows over the course of the last few years. So we've seen a reasonable rebound, And particularly on the Nasdaq, it's broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So this has been a broad-based rebound for these markets. And that's going to encourage risk-taking behavior. Then we can think about PayPal. So it was touch and go whether they were going to have a positive earnings report. And when we just look at the headlines, I think one of the most positive things is that they've announced a clear buyback program, 15 billion. But then we can look at the fact that analysts are looking at the firm's sharper focus. It's not so much that they're suddenly going to earn more money, but rather that they're going to be more aggressive in cutting costs. And the 2 billion investment by Elliott Investment Management is also going to refocus management on achieving those cost-cutting goals. We've also seen that, for example, Robinhood has cut 25% of their workforce. So the share has also rebounded, and it was up in a pretty dynamic manner in here today and up over 10%. And on a $10 share, that's a dollar move is a lot. So it's coming back to break out of this 3 month range. And this is a pattern that we've seen in a large number of shares. So we can also think about Uber, that it actually came through and beat analyst expectations yesterday and popped on the upside and was able to improve moderately on that performance in here today and is now testing the region of the 200-day moving average. So there's the potential here that we could see some steadier action. But in order for that to occur, I think we're going to have to at least hold the $25 level. And we're at the first area of potential resistance right now. So I don't think there's a real reason to go rushing out to buy it. We might easily see some consolidation. And then if we think about Lyft, well, it's doesn't have quite the same evidence of base formation development, but the share was in positive territory in here today. I was also looking at Salesforce in here today, and the share was in positive territory, and it easily halved between the peak in 2021 and the low in March, and really hasn't gone much of anywhere since. But they did pay rather a lot of money for the acquisition of Slack. And let me see if I can just find it here. And but certainly that was one of the causal factors. I think we can maybe look at that later. But CRM has had an historic PE of 700. Now the estimated PE is down to 40. So the cost of acquiring Slack has certainly started to wend its way through the balance sheet. And the only reason I mention it is that I've been invited into I don't know how many different Slack groups over the course of the last 2 weeks. So I talked about it with my daughters. They disparagingly call Slack Discord for adults. Well, Discord is a it's a venue for kids and adults to create chat groups about whatever they're interested in, and it's used as a forum, and it also has a call feature. For kids mostly to talk together while they're playing computer games. So I think it is an accurate depiction of what Slack offers. But the fact that it is growing in popularity is certainly noteworthy. I was talking with a couple of other parents when I was picking up my daughter from rowing camp yesterday. And we were talking about video calling apps. And there was obviously everybody's familiar with Zoom. So Zoom has also started to steady, and this is more like a 5 month range rather than a 3 month range. But Zoom also has a lot of competition. It's not like there's a shortage of these types of video calling apps. So there's definitely going to be some companies that will prosper in a recover any kind of short-term recovery scenario, but some will hold their breakout gains and then others will not. And my feeling at least is that it's companies like Zoom and Peloton are going to have the greatest difficulty in holding any rebound. And if anyone has got stale inventory, then any kind of rebound can be used to liquidate it. Now, we've certainly seen evidence of risk on behavior, but bond yields did not follow through on the upside in here today from yesterday's upside Q reversal, and in fact reversed an earlier advance to close on the lower side of the intraday range. But it does look like that 2.5% is at least a short-term area of resistance for prices. And the dollar index was also in positive territory in early trading and then finished out the day at barely holding on. So very close to unchanged on the day, but still holding this 105 area, and that is also a at least a near-term area of support. The Federal Reserve is very keen on getting down inflationary pressures, and they're not going to be under any real pressure to stop raising interest rates until unemployment rates rise. So it's increasingly likely that the job openings figures have peaked, and the retail job openings are leading on the downside. So that's obviously reflective of the big pullback we've seen on Target, for example, or on Ross Stores, but Ross Stores is rebounding right now. So even here, where there's a lot of firing taking place. So even though unemployment figures have not started to rise, the number of companies that are letting people go is going to increase, and we are still on a trajectory towards a growth surprise. And companies are conditioning investors to expect earnings to moderate. They're under guiding and therefore hoping to beat their guidance. And this has been a pattern of behavior in stocks for really quite some time. Now, when we look back at Europe, well, it's much more likely that Europe will be in a recession before the USA formally announces it. So the FTSE 250 has rebounded and it's back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So it's confirmed support in the region of the lows from back in March. This is also the first area of potential resistance, so it's rather important that it push up and out of this area. With dollar strength, then both the pound and the euro were weak yesterday, but a little bit steadier in here today. And it's certainly for the bulls to prove on both their accounts. Then when we think about China, they have got some serious questions about what they're going to do with the property sector. And the CSI 300 continues to trend lower. So it is increasingly likely that they're just going to have to nationalize it. Now, that's going to have a significant impact on the credit multiplier effect in the economy, and that might just be the cost of rescuing the property market because it's turning into popular protest. And certainly, when people start to coordinate their protest efforts across the country, that's the number one thing the Communist Party is afraid of. So it is quite likely we're going to see some additional evidence of clear efforts to ameliorate the situation for mortgage holders, that's going to be expensive. But we haven't yet seen the printing presses put into action in China. Now, the renminbi has been rather steady over the last 2 months, but this continues to look like a broad consolidation following the breakout for the dollar. So it's, I think, more likely than not the renminbi is going to weaken from here. Now, just let's flip back to Europe. So China is obviously in are having some difficulty, and that represents a problem for commodity demand. So oil prices are quite weak, and when we look at the size of the supply increase from Russia, then we it's really are not from Russia, from OPEC, excuse me. It's been kind of measly. So that's not enough of a rationale for oil prices to be down $3. If it's China and that's slowing down in terms of its demand, then that's seriously problematic. And then when we look at both oil and copper together, well, copper prices are pulling back again from the 350 area. So I'm considering putting my short back on. But if I do so, it'll be at a smaller size than the last time out, because we still have a rather deep oversold condition. But the bigger picture here is that China is the place that may surprise on the downside fastest. So when we then think about the European economy, this is problematic. And the linkages between Europe and China are much stronger than they are between the USA and China. And the DAX index has a similar pattern in the short term to the FTSE 250, and it's rebounding from the region of the March lows. But the natural gas challenge for Europe is still very much front and center. And Uniper came out today and said that they're going to have to keep their coal-fired power stations running because they just don't have the quantity of natural gas required to really keep the economy in a healthy position. So European natural gas prices remain really firm, but US natural gas prices also bounced in here today. That's despite the fact that LNG import capacity in the European area is at its limit already. What it suggests is that the risk of surprises in natural gas remains high, but that oil prices might actually start coming back down. And that's more about demand than a sudden massive increase in supply. And that's one of the biggest challenges for analysts is that historically, the models that have worked best is to just simply assume that demand is a constant. But the reality is that demand is not a constant, and it is big changes in demand can have a really significant effect on price. And that does appear to be what's happening now in the oil market. But of course, that will also have a knock-on effect on inflationary pressures. So, gasoline prices are going to have a very strong linkage with what happens in oil. So, one of the things that people are that the most visible indications of inflation are gasoline prices. And this was a meaningful pullback in here today following the contract change. And then wheat prices have also pulled back into the region of the lows from earlier on this year, and we're in negative territory again in here today. And exports from Ukraine have restarted. So the panic about the world running out of food is going to start easing. And we've also seen that soybean prices have been quite volatile over the course of the last week, but encountering resistance now in the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is a meaningful deterioration. Now, when we think about the fertilizer sector, well, these companies have started to rebound because they're reacting more to the high natural gas price than the sudden movement of supply coming out of Ukraine. There's still going to have to be a really significant effort to increase yield following all of the weather events that we've had this year. And of course, the natural gas market is also heavily impacted by the fact that the Rhine River is and the Rhine River is low, so that's impacting the supply of shipping up and down the river. Then the heat in a number of French rivers is impacting the nuclear industry because they need cooler water so that they don't have an environmental impact when they put the hot water back into the river. So this is serious in terms of Europe's ability to manage this energy crisis. So when we then think about the short term, medium term, long term, well, let me just come back to that. There's short-term potential for additional upside on many markets because we had oversold conditions. In the medium term, we're still in a tight financial conditions environment, and those conditions are going to get tighter. And it's not just about monetary policy, it's about fiscal policy, and then it's also about the energy crisis. And this is particularly relevant for Europe. Then, because of China, if the energy prices are coming down because of slowing Chinese growth, then that's going to have a knock-on effect for everywhere. And I do think that what we should be prepared for is a significant deflation shock. Inflation is already well priced in, but again, it's about the tendency of people to think about demand as a constant and the occasional times when it's not being really problematic. And this could easily be one of those occasions. So paying attention to what's happening in China is going to be, I think, one of the most important things to pay attention to globally. Now, as we think long term, there's obviously the bigger picture of the quantity of money that's been printed and the amount of time it's going to take to get inflation and under control, and then also to smooth out the trade relationships around the world. So it's likely we're going to have shorter cycles. It's going to provoke a more of a trading mentality among investors because trends aren't likely to last for a decade at a time, but rather that they're going to last for a couple of years or 18 months at a time, and then we'll see monetary policy tightening up. Because the one thing that central banks have learned this time is that leaving the stimulus in the economy for too long creates inflation. So they're not going to be doing that in future, and that alone will ensure that we'll have shorter cycles. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.